Marini's Media.
Hello and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Coming up, a review of the Scottish Cup as Storm Ciara blows a gale. Ryan Rice is asking for a wind meter. The weekend's results leave Super Cali as the last non-premiership team standing, and the fairy tales weren't to be as BSC and Clyde couldn't find glory on a stormy Sunday. I'm Andrew Slavin, and joining me from The Telegraph, it's JJ Bull.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Or morning, or whenever you're listening to this podcast.
And also in the studio from AFP, it's a Spanish-speaking friend, Karen Canning? Kieran Canning.
Hi, Karen.
Storm Kieran.
Just going to start calling you Karen.
Oh, you could have gone Storm Kieran. There we go.
Storm Kieran, yeah. I'm not that clever. I mean, you all know that, but there you go.
It's very harsh on yourself to start.
But
I won't correct you.
I'm going to stay with the storm and talk about Brian Rice has been trying to explain to people. He is saying, I can't believe in this day and age where we have goal line technology, VAR, all these tools to improve the game, and we don't have a wind meter. First of all, what's a wind meter?
A barometer?
Barometer.
Yeah.
But more importantly, Brian Rice doesn't seem to realise that Scottish football has neither goal-line technology nor VAR.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably more feasible for us to have a wind meter or a barometer because it wouldn't cost a bomb like the other things, but...
I like the idea that he's stuck in like a room somewhere in Hamilton and he's got all these like spinning science
like Captain
things.
Hook with a clock.
I have to measure, it's 32 miles an hour. So it doesn't mean anything, Brian.
Maybe. I know this weekend was extreme, but if you were starting to cancel games for strong winds, would you actually play any games at all in Scotland?
Well, yeah, exactly. I don't know, where do we draw the line here? I mean, it was a bit over the top, like you said. But the games this weekend... Did it affect when you watched it? You affect your enjoyment, doesn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like the Celtic game was funny because the ball was absolutely flying.
Sure. Yeah.
In the first half, particularly, if it got cleared from the BSC Glasgow end up the other side, it was like doubling in speed. It's like watching it fast forward whenever they cleared it, and you could see when players were trying to control it going into the final third that it was skipping away from them. There's one bit where I think Bauer runs past to the line, and you can see the ball. He's having to chase the ball much harder than he would normally have to because it's going. And Kilmarnock versus Aberdeen, Brunescu, the keeper, had to keep putting the ball down. It was like roll quickly away from him outside, near to outside the box, and to put it down again.
What I was disappointed at, having seen the rugby and football this weekend, was when in the rugby, when England,
putting their finger on the ball.
England had the penalty and the guy had to sort of like hold the ball for Farrell to hit it. And then in the Clyde Celtic game, Christie a couple of times was trying to take a corner and it was just rolling away, and Forrest ended up just coming close to him, and I really just wanted Forrest just to lie down on the ground, hold it in place.
All right then, well, wind meters in tow, let's get into the cup.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Let's start with the most enthralling match of them all. Yep, Aberdeen failed to score again for the fifth match in a row, cueing a chorus of boos again from Dons fans after a 0-0 game with Kilmarnock. Football wasn't the winner here, the weather was, but the real question is, JJ, when are Aberdeen going to score a goal? And why is it going so wrong since the winter break?
It's now so bad that there's a bar called, it's the Foundry, it's in Aberdeen, they're going to offer a free pint if Aberdeen score an open play against Hamilton.
I love that.
Which surely they must do, so I would go and, maybe try that one out. I've been looking into this, so there's a lot of reasons, I think, behind Aberdeen being very bad at scoring goals. It's been a mixture of things this season, but if we look at the actual numbers, the first thing that's kind of worrying about it is that Aberdeen are actually overperforming from what they should be. The underlying numbers, like XG, for example, says that... So Aberdeen's expected goals is 24.8. Actual goals is 30. So that's an overperformance of 5. And XG against is 31.49. Actual goals against is 28, which is, again, another overperformance because should have let in 3 goals more. Almost 3.5 goals more. That has led to an expected points. This is all Y-Scout data. Expected points of 32.7... Actual is 38, and that would, if it was 32.7, put Aberdeen, well, ignore the 0.7, would put them in 6th in the table, which feels about right for, I think, the way Aberdeen are playing at the moment. And this is the thing, it's the underlying stats that are the worrying bit. Now, Aberdeen fans aren't particularly happy with the style of football. It's been pretty brutal to watch, mm-hmm. kind of horrible at times.
Just this season either, really.
No, but people loved it when McInnes first came in, and like statistically the best year for Aberdeen, and when I say the best statistically, I mean that the numbers are just higher and everything. Doesn't necessarily mean they were better to watch then, right? And I've gone through it through the last five seasons to try and find where things are, and things have gotten progressively worse despite playing the same type of football. So like the system's never really changed. They still used wingers that come inside, and you meant to have fullbacks coming up. They got more crosses in the box. For example, like 16.4 crosses per game this season is what Aberdeen are putting in, versus in 2016-17, 23.7. I don't know if anyone looks at data that much. That's in terms of crosses and stuff like that, that's massive for Aberdeen. Kieran, what are you going to say?
Well, not wanting to go to, you know, old school Sky Sports pundit and go, the game's about players, JJ, you know, for all your stats, right?
Oh, I'm coming to that.
And those previous seasons, they had Hayes, Christie, Shinny, Kenny McLean. That's the biggest. Like,
they've still got Niall McGinn.
This is the whole point I was going to come to, is that in 2016-17, when I can go through every single stat I want because it's kind of boring, but this is more of everything. The team that started, you'd have McLean, Shinny, Christie, Jack Hayes, Adam Rooney was scoring back then. And then straight after that, you had a rebuild, you lost players. Last season, well, this season coming, another rebuild, loss of the captain. That's huge for any team when you lose that kind of a player. Also, the team is decimated with injury, especially in midfield. Mm-hmm. We look at the 5-0 defeat to Rangers. You had, I mean, this is not trying to excuse certain things in the tactical setups, right? I don't think it's not. Someone on Twitter said, like, oh, I think JJ doesn't realise that McInnes isn't the tactical genius he thinks he is. I don't think he's a tactical genius. I think he has. Some managers are good at man management, at constructing a team and building things that others can't. Some people just get it. Mm-hmm. And I think he's one of these people that just knows how to do that. I don't think he's Jurgen Klopp or anything like that, right? But the team that lost Ferdinand to Rangers, you had Lewis Ferguson as a six. He's not a six. You had Conor McLennan in the midfield. He's a winger or a striker. And Dean Campbell, who's like 14 years old. And then against the 4-0 loss to Celtic. He's also the best player on the pitch against Kilmarnock, by the way. But the 4-0 loss to Celtic, you had Greg Lee, left back in midfield. Zach Viner in midfield, right back maybe. And John Gallagher, who's just not quite there. And like the style of play has been the same, but with better players, like Kieran pointed out, it just works. So like the style of play doesn't work without the players to do it, but the players brought in are good enough to make that style of play work, but it's still not working.
I also think that earlier on in McInnes' reign, when they were getting to cup finals and finishing second, the results meant that it was easier for the fans to put up with that style of football, mm-hmm, a bit. Then it's hard to analyse, because on the one hand, you've had Rangers coming back up and getting much stronger, which means that second is now realistically no longer possible. It also makes getting to cup finals and semi-finals harder if they were to meet Celtic Rangers on the way. On the other hand, I feel like this is a season, when you look at all the other teams, that Aberdeen should probably be romping third, because Hearts have largely been a shambles. Hibs have had a managerial change. Motherwell started strongly but have faded quite badly as well. It's not like there's other good, really good teams in the league that are blocking Aberdeen from getting to third. And the fact that we're discussing how poor they have been and they're still 3 points off third shows that there's not that great competition there.
The question that sticks out in my mind, though, is as much as McInnes comes out and says he's trying everything, which it looks like he is trying everything, it's still his job to get results in their favour. The players have got a responsibility on the pitch to carry his message. It's not happening right now.
Yeah, and I think there's a few reasons with this as well. And I think, so there's like basic things that I think can be either linked to confidence in the players. And if they've had it, they're just not playing with any freedom. I don't quite know why that is, whether it's a system that's kind of stifling them a little bit. But you see, like, so the thing I don't like is when McKenna or Taylor or Devlin just lump, like, hoof it 70 yards towards Cosgrove and then the ball gets lost. And Aberdeen have one of the lowest passes into the final third statistic as well, which is to do with construction and approach. So build-up play is more from the back, but then it gets shelled. So there's no point building from the back if we can do that anyway. And you have like little positioning things like Logan, who will stop being the team so often now. They've got Ronald Hernandez there at right back. But if Logan's positioning was 5 yards further up the pitch, the right-sided centre-back would have like a vertical diagonal ball to him rather than a more sideways one. This is really nitpicking, but it makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. So if you've got a two, you then have a three, and the positioning and the spacing is really important. If it's an extra 5-10 yards, the ball goes forward constantly, so you can move it. What happens if it goes to Logan, who then has to go back inside to McGeech, something like that, and or Ojo, and they turn round and there's no one that they can get the ball to progress it, and it goes back, it gets shelled and gets lost. And so they're not getting as much of the ball in the final third into the box.
Well, obviously, Aberdeen have to go to Kilmarnock now to play a Scottish Cup replay. That's Wednesday, 19th of February.
Please not again. It was awful.
Maybe they'll score before then. But they are on the longest run of games without a goal since 2011. So we will wait to see what happens there. We're going to talk about Kilmarnock later as we get around to previewing the midweek fixtures. So let's move on to our one and only Giant Killing. Right, who would have thought Inverness Cali Thistle would be the only team who could muster an upset after they put out Livingston with a 1-0 win. It's been 20 years since the infamous Super Cali Go Ballistic headline, and this time around it ended, the weather was atrocious. There you go. There you go.
You say who would have thought that Inverness would be the only team to spring an upset, but they have this history in the competition, not just that, obviously, the famous one against, a couple of times they've beaten Celtic in the Scottish Cup. They got to the semi-finals last year as well, so they are, you know, a team that's capable of putting a run together. And for all that, I mean, in here last week, I said that I didn't think they would beat Livingston just because of the run that Livingston have been on. There is a big difference between Livingston's home form and their away form, so mm-hmm. maybe going up to Inverness made it significantly more difficult for them.
John Robertson agrees with you because he says it's a measure of this club's history in the Scottish Cup that people don't really see a result as a shock, a surprise maybe, but not a shock. Do you agree with that as well, JJ?
I think a lot of these games, I'm not really surprised by any of the results.
I would say it is a shock because Livingston have been going so well recently.
Yeah, but
despite losing to Ross County, I think it was.
But these sort of results come up and it's sometimes like they're doing so well in the Scottish Premiership, and Livy actually talking about more boring statistics, but they are underperforming what they should be. They should be higher up the table. They should be in like third or something like that. Mm-hmm. Having a really good season, everything they do is good, but these games can throw a surprise. I think Kieran's right about the pitch. Like, that makes a huge difference. And you've got that big advantage of playing on these weird pitches,
and it's going to be good for them as well. More money for Inverness, who need the money.
The thing as well, Inverness are second in the Championship. They're not going to catch Dundee United.
No.
But the fact that a team is high up in the Championship, with what we've said about the teams in the Premiership below the top two being much of a muchness, and also they can maybe concentrate a bit more on the cup run, knowing that they're almost certainly going to be in the playoffs anyway, but not catch Dundee United.
See, I totally agree with that. Like, I want it to be a bigger league than the 12, and I don't think there's that much of a huge difference between the ones in the Championship. The Premiership could easily be bigger.
Yeah, of course it could.
But we've just proven it with that 1-0.
We're going to keep rattling on. I'm going to talk about Falkirk Hearts. This was the match that Kieran tipped last week for being a potential upset, but it was the Edinburgh side who came up trumps thanks to Sean Clare's penalty.
Daft challenge gives Hearts a penalty kick, but Sean Clare is about to take. Sean Clare up against Robbie Much. Clare it is. Goal! Hearts make the breakthrough.
Hearts will count themselves lucky though, because Falkirk hit the woodwork three times.
I was going to say, I have no idea how Hearts won this match. Not because of what happened, but if anyone who tried to watch it, it was impossible to see what was happening on the field. They were so windswept, and the rain was lashing down over the cameras. All it was raindrops.
And the thing is, you would have thought, oh, just kind of cut to another camera and get the guy to wipe his lens or something. But you couldn't do that because the rain was proper lashing down.
And there was only one camera.
No, there wasn't. It was televised.
Scottish football, you know.
No, exactly. They threw some money at this one. They threw some money at this one.
For people unfamiliar, Slaven is a real nerd when it comes to camera angles and stuff. And watching football is occasionally not very fun because he brings up, I wouldn't have used that slate.
It's more because I tried to analyse why they've chosen the certain decisions they've chosen.
He's just slagging off every other TV provider. I can't believe it.
Thanks a lot, mate. I was going to say, despite a rain-soaked lens, you know, it was a pretty busy game, this, and it was very good for Falkirk. I thought they were really unlucky. Like you said, they were definitely the better side, but this is a moment for Hearts to kind of savour, because it's been going so badly for them, but they're now into the next round of the Cup up against Rangers. So it's a moment for them to look forward to,
that's
I
good.
Think.
We changed the shape as well for this, so it'll obviously be the same system adapted for windy conditions, to play with a back three, Dicamona, Smith and Halkett in there.
Mm.
He's still tinkering with it. Doesn't seem quite settled on the... And this is more like Southampton's kind of set up with Ralf Hasenhüttl's very, very, very German-style football.
The one real positive, I would say, for them is a clean sheet, which is what they've badly needed. The flip side of that is that it wasn't exactly like a solid, you know, clean sheet where they were solid and denied Falkirk chances. Sure. It was just that Falkirk didn't take their chances. And you know, for all that they have spent significant money for a Scottish League One team, they're a Scottish League One team. So yeah, when Hearts go to Celtic on Wednesday, for example, mm-hmm, if they concede that quality of chance, then they're done for.
There's one more thing I thought was interesting about this. So they hit the woodwork three times, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah,
three. But the shots,
twice from the same player.
But the shots on target statistics say they had zero shots on target. Yeah. Should that be the case? I want to know what you think here of that.
What, are you suggesting hitting the woodwork should be on target?
I don't know.
Because it shouldn't. It's not on target. It's not where the...
Oh,
Kieran? Are you...
Yeah, I'm with Andrew in this one. Yeah. It's not, you know...
I haven't said that.
Yeah, hit the post 100 times, it's still not going in. Unless, I suppose, you hit... How do you class a shot that hits the post and goes in?
On the inside of the post.
Exactly.
Because it kind of was, actually, the two... I can't remember who it was. It was McManus, I think it was. I can't remember his first name. He hit the post in the same point twice. Really unfortunate. Anyway, look, moving on. People called Kira might have got a bit of stick at the weekend, but so did Aaron Muirhead for Ayr United. His 26 minutes on the pitch, including an own goal, a yellow card, and then a straight red.
It was just like the 5 minutes between the own goal and then the challenge to get himself sent off.
It was 8 minutes, actually, but there you go. Can continue.
The challenge to get himself sent off, I think, is just wonderful the way he just dives in and then just starts walking off. He's like, he barely even waits for the card. He kind of knows it's coming.
Yeah.
After committing the challenge, has a bit of a push and a shove with one of the St. Johnstone players and then continues on his way down the tunnel. Maybe he just didn't like playing in the rain.
You know, I went to school with Aaron. He went to my same high school and I never thought he would become a professional footballer. He was a good little footballer, but like midfielder, and he was really small. And I always remember when he was at Partick Thistle and he was just so tall, so, so tall. I was like, obviously... growth spark, but there you go. Arm your head. He was never a dirty player back in school days.
Well, maybe he had somewhere to be and he wasn't allowed to get off or something. You know, like when you request work holidays and they say, no, you can't do that. We need you for this one. There's not enough to cover you in the rota.
Yeah.
This is how you do it when you're a footballer.
look, this was good news for Tommy Wright. He's looking to the future. He says, we can dream of winning the cup, but we need to see who we get in the draw. You only need to win 5 games and now we've won 2 of them. They've drawn Celtic at home. So do you think they're still dreaming of the cup?
I mean...
Someone's got to beat them at some point.
That's in the law of averages, and I think it's 30 goals without reply Celtic have scored against St Johnstone.
That's
so
correct.
Again, on the law of averages, at some point that has to end. You would imagine there's different ways to look at this. One is, if you're going to win the cup, you're probably going to have to beat at least one, if not both, of Celtic and Rangers. Yeah. On the other hand, I was thinking the tie where it's the two replays have to play each other, so St Mirren and Motherwell will play either Aberdeen or Kilmarnock. Do you prefer to go down that route, get to the semi-finals, avoid them, maybe hope that they get each other in the semi-finals and then you only have to beat one of them?
And you always get pumped in the final. It's one of the weird things about Scottish football is that it's very hard to explain to, I don't know, maybe you'll feel differently about this to me, but when you beat someone like... As an Aberdeen fan, if you beat Rangers or Celtic in just one game, mm-hmm, it doesn't feel as good as winning a cup, but it's such an enormous achievement, mm-hmm, that happens so rarely. Like, to do it in an actual cup final is so rare. I mean, Aberdeen have beaten Rangers a few times a day in cups, quarterfinals, semifinals to get to where they've been recently in recent seasons. But that's not an achievement. But because it's always Rangers or Celtic, you've got to play in the final at some point. You've got to, you know, beat that last boss on the way to actually getting the clearing the level. Like, it's... funny that it's... I don't know if I'm trying to...
The problem is for the other teams is that when it comes to the cup final, normally, whether it's Celtic and Rangers, are rested and fully concentrated, and it's although it's not as big an occasion as it is for the other teams because they're there more regularly, it's still a big occasion, so they're focused and normally at it, where you have a better chance of beating them. Whereas, for example, I think these games are going to come after... Celtic Rangers playing in the Europa League, so there's the chance there that, yeah, you know, they're distracted by that, or you know, they've got so many other games they're a bit, yeah, worn down, whatever. Whereas, yeah, once it gets to the final, the even slim chance that there was is further minimised.
That's
by
it,
that.
Like you beat them once, it might as well have been the cup final because it's so hard to do.
Right, well, let's round up the other ties as Celtic overcame Clyde 3-0. No magic repeated there, sadly, because Clyde beat them back in 2006. Rangers cruised to a 4-1 win over Hamilton, who were playing a younger squad, which led to BBC reporter to use the word whippersnappers in his article. An underused word, whippersnappers. Elsewhere, Alex Jakubiak scored his first goal for St Mirren as they drew with Motherwell. And Hibs had a 4-1 win over Lowland League side BSC Glasgow, thanks to a Mark McNulty hat-trick and an assist. So yeah, decent times. New recruits are doing well for Hibs. Greg Docherty was the other man in the score sheet. Is there anything you'd like to say about any of those ties before we move on to looking ahead to the midweek Premiership fixtures?
I'd like to say that I incorrectly said Celtic were playing against BSC Glasgow when I, of course, meant Clyde.
Correct. I'm glad you corrected yourself.
Yes.
Hibs could be an interesting shot for the cup.
What did you see against Lowland League BSC to give you that assessment?
The McNulty's a goal machine.
Yeah, the difference in quality there. But just the fact that they handled that well, you know, it was relatively professional job. But some of the players that they brought in, I mean, I know, again, you know, it was only BSC Glasgow, but McNulty scoring a hat-trick. Doherty could be an interesting signing for them. They've got Omiyonga back. I keep waiting to see sort of a more gradual improvement from Hibs since Jack Ross came in. We've spoken about Inverness have a sort of penchant for cup upsets, but
penchant, very nice.
But Hibs have got them at home in the quarterfinals, so.
That when you just said Pusher, me and JJ just went either side of the mic to look at each other.
You literally did that. Scottish people listening to this will remember it wasn't still a game, it was only an excuse for they used to do that, like, ooh.
No, that was chewing the fat, friend. Sorry. Chewing the fat. Yeah. Je m'appelle Andrew in my own baguette.
Also, like, you're not saying Hibs have got a chance of the cup because they've beaten.
No.
I mean,
no.
You weren't actually impressed by the performance.
But the signings they made in January. They played relatively well away to Rangers last midweek. The draw, it's like accumulation of factors, I think it's supposed. And I think that they will be better a couple of months down the line. So if they can beat Inverness, then I think the semis aren't until April some point. Yeah, maybe they'll be in a better place come then.
Well, that does make sense to me. I've got a sneaky feeling Celtic might win it.
Was this? I mean, the amount of games Celtic have won in cup competitions in a row is just staggering. But here's a look how the quarterfinals look. St Johnstone will host Celtic. Hearts will host Rangers, which would be an interesting one because Hearts beat Rangers recently there. Hibs versus Inverness, Caledonian Thistle, St Mirren or Motherwell will play Aberdeen or Kilmarnock. And they will all happen at the end of February, beginning of March. So looking forward to that one. Up next, Premiership.
Everyone remembers that time you've had that peach of an accumulator looking good only for, oh, and the keeper's let it slip through his legs in the 94th minute. Or the right back has to pull on the gloves and face a penalty. Or Man United have again conceded a late equaliser. But with Paddy Power's Acca Cracker, you get a free bet if one leg of your fourfold plus Acca lets you down on all football matches and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Minimum odds of 1-5 on each leg. Online exclusive. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Scottish Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
All right, so it's a full midweek Scottish Premiership fixtures to go through, starting with Kilmarnock v Rangers. Stephen Gerrard's been rattling cages, apparently, to get his team going again. They won last week over Hibs thanks to new boy Yanis Hadji with an 84th minute winner. What do you guys think of Hadji? Looks like a bit of a baller.
Yeah, I mean, what I've seen so far has been very impressive, which is in line with what I saw him at the Under-21 Euros last summer. There was a bit of doubt over his two moves outside of Romania haven't gone well, but getting that goal in his first start, I mean, it's going to be a massive, massive confidence booster. He is going to be one of these guys that he'll sort of shoot on sight, so there will be games where people get annoyed at him because he's fired 10 shots over the bar, but he's that sort of goal threat from midfield that, not because that sounds harsh to say, they've been needing that goal threat from midfield when you look at the weekend and Arfield scores twice and Aribo scores, but yeah, someone that just has a bit of magic. And Gerrard's been talking about them getting their spark back after the winter break. Maybe he's the one that just adding that something the new to get them back into it, because the Hibs game was really important for them to win. If they drop points again, then and Celtic went further ahead, you know, it was going to be really difficult for them to pull it back. So whilst they're sort of finding their form again, they just need to make sure that they don't lose any more ground, because although it's 7 points, they have a game in hand and they've still got to play Celtic twice, so it's still in their own hands.
Well, it looks like a good one for Rangers, because, well, they've scored in every away fixture so far, and Kilmarnock aren't exactly, as much as they've had decent results in the last two games, aren't exactly great at the moment. So, you know, I want to suggest that are Rangers a little bit good going forward, but not so good in defence, because they were caught out by Hamilton. And they were caught out in the last game as well. We've got Borna Barisic, who's a doubt for Wednesday. And so is this a chance for Halliday and Flanagan to impress? Because if this can be a clean sheet with one of them in there, it might help their argument for a contract extension in the summer, because they're both out.
I'm basing this off the back of the Aberdeen-Killy game. Killy offered, I think, like nothing in that game. They just wanted to shut it down, which they did well. Aberdeen couldn't really get at them whatsoever, and they were able to go out in the counter. It's exactly what they've been doing for years. Not had the players they've had in previous seasons. They'll do the same thing against Rangers, who have to work out how to play in these tight spaces and create, which is the thing that it's the kind of thing that Ryan Kent's brought in for, because he can make these things happen. And he's done it already this season. He just comes on and makes stuff happen. It's going to be one of those games that Rangers could either win this 4-0 or just struggle all the way through it. And the thing you're starting to see now is it's whether they are, like, I've read maybe the people have said that they're tired off the back of another little pre-season they've done in Dubai they went to, is it?
Yeah.
Right. So they come out of that and they're maybe feeling the effects of that, but they'll be good going into the final stretch of it, which is no use if they've dropped too many points. Or it could be that, like, the heads just aren't quite on it yet, because it takes time to turn people into champions.
Yeah,
like,
I think this could be a tricky game just because of the way Kilmarnock's set up. Rangers have struggled with that type of opposition recently, when we've talked about how the fact that Aberdeen posed no threat going forward, but they drew nothing each at Ibrox. Even like the Hibs game, the sort of Rangers had a lot more of the play in the second half, but struggled to break Hibs down. Barisic missing is a massive miss. I think he's probably gone under the radar because of people like Morelos and Kent getting a lot of plaudits this season, but I think he's maybe outside Morelos being Rangers' best player. I mean, a massive improvement from last season. And what was obvious when Tavernier was out and, you know, he's back, is that Rangers really depend on their fullbacks sort of creating for them. Mm-hmm. And so when one of them is out, it's much easier for the opposition to defend, sort of double up on the other side. Particularly if Flanagan's playing, he's going to offer like absolutely no attacking output whatsoever. And he's been really poor in the few games that he has played. I think that the defensive issue you talked about, I mean, Rangers' numbers defensively have been very good throughout the course of the season. One, the problem they've had at the moment is that with Hellander out, Katic had a good spell, obviously scored the winning goal against Celtic, but he was pretty poor in the Aberdeen game, I think it was. He gave away two chances, one where Cosgrove went through and messed it up. So because that Edmondson came in for the Hibs game, and then in the Hamilton game, Edmondson looked pretty shaky. The goal came down his side, and it was defensively, particularly when Gerrard said about the rattle in the cages, he was talking about the way they were defending, because there was another chance just after Hamilton equalised where Goldson handles inside the box and like somehow got away without conceding the penalty. Mm-hmm. So, and that was against a much changed Hamilton team. So I think that getting that sort of central defensive partnership right and getting Barisic as back as quickly as possible is going to be a big thing for Rangers.
Is Brunescu suspended for it? He got two yellows in the game against Hearts.
Was he
suspended at the weekend?
No, he played in the weekend.
He must be suspended for the league then.
Yeah. Can make a difference having not your main goalkeeper behind between the sticks. And the last game, the result was 1-0 Rangers at Ibrox. Really tight again. Exactly the same thing we're just talking about. It was 5-4-1 basically the whole game, or 4-5-1 all the way through, and Morelos managed to get in behind the last line in the 65th minute. It's going to be exactly the same thing.
Well, the thing is Rangers have been pretty good going forward, and Kilmarnock haven't had a clean sheet in 9 games. But after last week's discussion, it emerged today that a 12-year-old boy has been charged with racist chants against Rangers players during the Old Firm at the end of 2019. As for Kilmarnock, you know, good two wins in a row now, including a 3-2 win over Hearts last week. And here to speak with us about his team is Barry Richmond from the Killie Trust. Barry, two wins in a row. What's caused all the great turnaround? Is Alex Dyer going to be a good thing for Kilmarnock in the hot seat?
Well, to be fair, it took him long enough to get there, to get the two wins in a row. It was maybe a bit worrying before then. It's hard to tell, really. He's stuck with the same squad. Alessio had as well. He's not really, really tried to bring people in, and it wasn't really happening. It's just a matter of waiting, really, I think. He knows the players. He's still obviously kind of toying about the tactics and stuff like that. But he's got it right. Well, saying that, she probably won Saturday, I think, but hopefully it's showing signs that it might come good.
How do you feel about the game on Saturday against Aberdeen? Do you think, you said that you thought they should have won. I felt like Killie didn't really offer anything going forward. It was all about just keeping them quiet and hitting on the counter, which is similar to what, I guess, Clark did. I don't know.
Correct.
Yeah.
So correct myself, what I meant really was that Aberdeen were there for the taking. I think they're playing that badly. And the game probably finished as it should have. It was a shocking game to both teams. The weather was terrible.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't much happening. We were set up the way we were set up because, you know, our main two players were out. Finlay was out of the defence, bringing Broadfoot back in for his first start. Maybe they thought, you know, we might need five at the back for bringing him in. You seen that? We kept the two up front, played five at the back and stuff. Again, they're missing Burke, and the age that he is, what a phenomenal player he's been for our team. Both of them are out. Different formation. It was never going to be easy. In fact, I'm probably quite correct in saying we've never ever beat Aberdeen the Scottish Cup. Ever. So that'll be 150 years. So it was quite an ask to ask, you know, the boys to go up there and do it. So I'm quite happy that we've got another chance to do it. And I think that, well, you know, every fan probably feels the same. If there's a record to be broken, we'll break it. If somebody's got a run going, we'll be the ones that'll give it up. But hopefully that will not be the case this time.
Just, you mentioned the age of Burke and also Dicker and Power in their 30s, Broadfoot coming back. Is that a bit of a concern that a lot of the key important players are at the wrong side of the 30, and is there enough good young players coming through?
I think it's to an extent. Alex Dyer brought a couple of boys through, as I say, as soon as he started. I've seen a couple of them on the bench recently, so hopefully he's going to give them an opportunity. Steve Clark, as much as he's a miracle worker, didn't really have much time for the youth side of it. He was only here for a finite period of time, so he was always just going to concentrate on the first team, so that kind of halted us for a wee while, bringing people through, etc. If Dyer's going to change that, that's all well and good. As for Chris Burke, I would give him another year. I don't know what it is. I don't know what he's on, but I would give him another year, actually, as it is. Just seems to be one of these guys who's making up for lost time, I think. He spent a long time out with a virus at Ross County, and now he's making up for it. Phenomenal player. And as concerned as with, I think the bigger concern for us is so many players out of contract, not just their age. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got a full rebuilding job again. The board at one stage said, you know, we don't want to continue to bring in loan players. We need to bring in guys who would be able to continue for the rest of the, you know, full-time players as opposed to a lot. So we're not changing every season or every window and that kind of stuff. And then we got to this transfer window and brought in two folk and... So, well, what happened to that plan then? But hopefully that'll be changing again. It must be quite difficult though. Your manager's only guaranteed to be there this summer. How many of these players are going to sign on a game they don't know who's the manager?
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. Like the club's in transition halfway through a season. Nobody wants to be in that position.
I wonder if it'll end up that Dyer goes back to being an assistant and they take someone else in to work with him or something like that.
But would Dyer accept that now that he's been given the role until the summer? Would he accept becoming an assistant again to someone brand new coming in?
I don't think so, to be honest. I think he didn't really want to take the job initially when Alessio got it. Mm-hmm. And he was quite happy to hang on where he was at the time, and then I think the time Alessio had left, he must have thought to himself, you know what, I can do that. I can do that. As it turned out, just immediately after that, no, he couldn't. And it kind of went down in for a wee while, but they seem to get their confidence back and he seems to be doing okay. I'm quite good. If we finish in the top six, certainly they'll be asking him to continue his contract and take it on a wee bit longer. As long as we're not in too much bother, I would assume it might be the same. You never know. But if he seemed to be building something and he seemed to be bringing guys through and some decent players in, then I don't think they'll have a problem with him staying on. Again, that'll have a knock-on effect on what players that we've got and who they want to stay. And do we want them to stay? If, you know, you're 100% correct. A few of them knocking on a bit now. I think Chris Burton, he's exceptional. And maybe the exception is the rule. Pibb and Dicker are fine, but, you know, these guys will not last forever, I suppose.
Barry Richmond from the Killie Trust. Right, Hamilton v Aberdeen. We've spoken about Aberdeen's lack of penetration in front of goal. As for Hamilton, they'll be looking at this as an opportunity to put real pressure on Hearts. A win on Tuesday night and Accies will have a stronger hold over that coveted 11th spot.
Yeah, and also Brent Rice has started to make little excuses ahead of this one, saying he's missing like four strikers, I think, through injury or something
right.
Like that.
Michael Miller, Andy Dale, Stephen Davies and George Oakley are all out.
Right, so they've got no strikers, right? So yeah. You know how that's going to...
Well, they have Andy Winter, I think his name is. They've got the 17-year-old.
Ogunpo.
And Ogunpo as well, who was excellent against Celtic.
Okay,
and
well,
decent against Rangers.
You still know how they're going to play, but that's the thing. I mean, imagine Sky Sports putting this on... Is it Sky, is it? Got this on TV? Like, it's going to be in a plastic pitch just after a massive storm against two teams who cannot score.
But lovely view. Ugh. Lovely view of the Sainsbury's.
Mm. Well, I think the last two games between these sides ended 1-0.
Aberdeen's just, it's all over. At some point, it's going to just burst and they'll just find, they'll
just
work out to play.
Just to pick up on the point that, well, Brian Rice has a few complaints. One of the things he's talked about with the injuries is the number of midweek rounds. So since we came back in from the winter break, that there was league games that Wednesday, full league round, last Wednesday, full league round, this Wednesday. I worked it out that this is just scheduled midweek games, so like not rearranged when you take in cup games and all that kind of stuff. 8 of the 38 games, so like nearly a quarter of them, are scheduled for midweek rounds. So it's like, I think it's one of the leagues with most midweek rounds in like the whole of Europe. And when you take into account our climate, our winters, if you're a season ticket holder, you feel sort of shortchanged. Yeah. I don't really understand the need to play so many cup games at weekends.
It negates the whole point of having the break as well. Because you suddenly don't have any recovery and training days.
But it's at both ends. It's like they jam-pack December full of games.
Yeah.
And then January and February. Again, we come back to the point of when we have our winters and all these like night games. Yeah, it just doesn't seem to... I mean,
so would you rather be without the winter break and get these games done?
I don't understand
why
start the season even earlier. Because, so I can understand the problem where, for example, Celtic haven't had a free midweek at all this season. Since the season started, that wasn't an international break. So basically the club teams haven't had a free midweek. Rangers have had one, and that was in December, and the only reason they had it was because Sky had arranged a game at Hibs for the Friday night, so they couldn't play like on the Wednesday beforehand. So yeah, where do you fit it in? Given that all the Scottish teams have to play so many qualifiers early on in the season, they could start the season even earlier and extend it out a little bit that way.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it just seems to like be able to free up some...
Maybe later in the season when it gets lighter, they could just play more games on the same night. So just schedule them one
again,
after another.
The problem with that is like it would very, very rarely happen. But they've got to account for European games if...
Yeah.
But again, that would only affect Celtic and Rangers. So why not? And they have the squads to deal with it. So why not allow...
Later into the summer, we're not going to qualify for anything anyway.
So. Why not allow Hamilton and Kilmarnock and Motherwell on these teams to play more games in the springtime?
What about Brian Rice and his message? You said he's dropping little excuses. Little excuse bombs.
That sounds kind of harsh, but yeah.
But I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
But the thing is, there is a huge match after this game when Hamilton host Hearts. So... this game, midweek, you'd wonder if Rice and Stendhal to be fair, are probably focusing on that game more than their midweek fixtures.
No, definitely not. I mean, really? Yeah, of course not. They're going after this. I mean, they'll treat every game is very important, as we always say on the podcast. There's no way he's looking at the game ahead of that, especially with injuries. You just put the best team you can put out at the time. And it's not like he's got the kind of squad of players where he can pick and choose different players for different tackle setups. It's not like, Rangers and Celtic, they've got like two squads of players they can play. Hamilton's got their first 11 and a couple of subs.
But Stendhal has came out and said that, you know, for instance, John Suter, he might not play in this game because he's not ready, but he needs him back for the weekend, more importantly.
But that means you can give them rest days and recovery, because otherwise you can...
But also, there's a massive difference in Hamilton and Hearts in terms of squad depth. I mean, we've talked quite a lot this season about how Hearts' squad is too big. There's too much deadwood and stuff there, so they have the bodies to put in if they do want to put in a sort of second string against Celtic.
Well, let's stick with Hearts, because they take on Celtic, and Hearts did have a short time off the bottom of the table, but they're now back there after they lost to Kilmarnock last week. This week, it's going to be a much more difficult test against Celtic, but you'd maybe think that win over Rangers gives them a little hope that in these games they can rise to the occasion.
I think there's a massive difference playing these games, playing Celtic or Rangers at Tynecastle and playing away, because Tynecastle is so tight, especially the way Stendhal wants to play, which is pressing. It's like much easier to do in a much smaller pitch like Tynecastle is. And even then, as we saw in the Kilmarnock game, I was here last week saying this, and it's turned out to be the case. That Rangers game is increasingly looking like a game that Hearts have had three or four times this season where it seems like a turning point and never actually materialises that way. Like when they beat Hibs away earlier in the season under Levine, like when they drew with Rangers at home when the first time round, they beat St Mirren 5-2, I think, and when Austin McPhee was there. And all these times you're like, okay, now they'll kick on. Now, you know, they'll rise through the division a little bit. And it's just not happening, because they're making the same mistakes. Even in that Rangers game, for all they played very well, they allowed Rangers a number of chances just with very easy balls over the top of a high line. Mm-hmm. And like Kilmarnock exposed that. And the goalkeeping situation is a big one for Hearts at the moment, because Pereira is just throwing in goals left, right and centre.
Why is that an issue?
Because he's not very good.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Because goalkeepers are meant to not let in goals.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. Well, what about Celtic then? I mean, Celtic just unstoppable form since they lost to Rangers. Well, they are unstoppable because they've won every single game. But a key to that success really has been Edouard and Griffiths, because Neil Lennon seems to have adopted this kind of 3-5-2 formation.
It's his favourite one.
Griffiths and Edouard up front, although he changed that at the weekend in the Cup with Klamala up front on his own. But how do you, as Daniel Stendhal, look to stop someone as good as Edouard really is? Because he's been top class this season. I would even go as far to say as definite player of the year so far.
I don't know about that.
Fair enough.
To answer your question, how you set up, like if you think they're going to play with a two up front, and the natural response to gain advantage in defence is to play a back three, which means you're going to play a five. And because it's Celtic, you have to flood the midfield with a four to make up for the three they've got there. So you have to play 5-4-1. And you can't really press like that. 5-4-1 is what you see teams like... the best example right now is like Newcastle is the most super defensive version of this I can think of in the English Premier League, where you just sit back and you have to hit people on the counter with your two wide players. Do Hearts have the players to do this? I don't know.
Well, if they have John Suter, you'd have Smith.
Well, on the wing.
No, not on the wing.
Well, if Christoph Vera is a number seven.
Well, there you go. Very well played. What about Lee Griffiths, guys? Because since he's came back with aplomb, scoring plenty.
With aplomb,
yeah.
You'd never say that if we weren't in the studio, would you?
Huh?
You wouldn't say aplomb if we weren't in the studio.
It's a good commentator's word, isn't it?
You've done your punditry bit, I like it.
Thanks very much. What do you think for a shoe-in in the Scotland squad at the moment?
Yes and no. But I think Griffiths is benefiting massively from the way the team is playing around him. I'm not sure he would, if you put him into the Scotland squad at the moment, and we would almost certainly play one up front because we don't really have any strikers and we've got loads of midfielders. I'm not sure he's at the standard yet. He's not the player he was two or three years ago, mainly fitness-wise, in terms of being able to run the channels and stuff with one up front. The way he said, like, a play at the moment, and he's got sort of inspired player next to him in Edouard, and all that he's creating as well as scoring himself, and the attention that he then draws from opposition defences. Like, for example, the goal that Griffiths scored against Motherwell last Wednesday, it's incredible. He's like completely unmarked about 5 yards out and just has to tap it in. McGregor's kind of done all the hard work for him. So it's a very different setup going from a Celtic team that's smashing. Like, even for example, when Celtic go and play in the Europa League in a couple of weeks' time, I'm not convinced Griffiths will play. I think now that Elie Nussey is back, which is a big difference from the last few weeks, I think for the games against the more difficult opposition, he'll go back to playing with just Edouard up and Elie Nussey and Forrest either side.
How many years would we need to keep Odson Edouard in Scotland before you could call him up to the main team?
5 years. I think it's 5 years.
I'm just putting it out there. Yeah. He's been there how many years now? Two?
I also think Morelos has only played for Colombia in friendlies.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, that would be great. Could you imagine Eduardo Morelos up front for Scotland? Absolutely outstanding.
Would you take an SPFL, like, best of?
Let's get them a tartan. Get them a tartan made. Superb. Well, before we finish off all the other games, let's speak to Lee Price at Paddy Power. So, Lee, we've got a double round of fixtures, and I fancy Aberdeen to finally get their scoring boots back on against Hamilton. Can you give me some odds on the Dons, please?
Yeah, we're with you there, actually. They're odds on to win this match, which usually does require a goal to be scored. And we're confident the Dons will score. It's a mammoth 1-6. They notch at least once. And even money, they score two or more. One word of warning for Aberdeen fans, though. We might expect you to break your duck, but Hamilton are also odds on to score. Yikes.
Yikes indeed. I'm interested in Hadji scoring against both Kilmarnock and Livy. What can I get?
You and every Rangers fan going at the minute. The trip to Kilmarnock should be another good opportunity for Hadji, and he's 7-4 to score any time in that one. Rangers are 1-4 to win that match, and even more certain to beat Livingston this weekend. They're 1-7 to get their 3 points there. Hadji to notch in both games this week for Rangers, 5-1.
Oh, by the way, did you know about our upcoming live shows in March?
I knew.
Yeah, you did.
Because we're going.
Yeah.
We're doing live shows.
You can see me and JJ and some familiar Scottish names and faces live in person in Scotland, the best place in the world. We'll be playing Glasgow Glee Club on Tuesday the 24th of March, and then we're in Aberdeen.
We're playing the Lemon Tree, not the big room. Smaller room, but it'd be really nice if everyone could come because it'll fill up and be much more fun. It's a symbiotic thing, these shows. The audience gets what the audience receives, and the performers give back what they receive from the audience. Come along, it'll be good. Oh, what a great time!
It'll be a good laugh. That's on the following night, Wednesday, the 25th of March. And if you want a ticket to be there, it's really, really simple. Just go to thetotallyfootballshow.com/events, click on the one you want to attend, and it will happen. That's thetotallyfootballshow.com/events. We'll see you there. Ross County, let's talk about them, up against Hibs. Ross County beat Livingston last time out in the league, but they still have the worst defensive record in the division. Let me ask you this. Is their victory over Livingston a stepping stone in the right direction, or more likely to be a one-off?
Certainly a step in the right direction. I mean, they're on a terrible run, and we're really in danger of being pulled back into that relegation dogfight. It gives them a bit more breathing space. They're still conceding too many goals, and 50 goals already, and there's still 13 games of the season to go. Mm-hmm. I think, again, as the Livingston game showed, they're going to be reliant on their home form, so I don't hold out too much hope for them going to Easter Road.
I mean, Hibs have only kept two clean sheets at home in the league, but they have only failed to score once at home all season. I think it's going to be a fair game, this. I think both sides are going to go for it pretty hard, because you see the likes of McNulty coming into the side at the weekend, and Ross County, could they cause an upset here? Because I think going on form, JJ, you'd say Hibs should look after this game pretty well.
Could they cause an upset? Yes. Will they? I don't know.
That's why we get JJ on.
Yeah. Nice.
Great analysis.
What am I going to say about this? I mean,
start calling you the fence.
Yeah. I just don't... It's hard to predict these things, isn't it? Who's going to win, Sleven?
I think Hibs are going to win, comfortably.
I also think Hibs are going to win, but they also
Nolte
might
Christian
not.
Christian Deutsch are going to be on fire.
If they are, then I'd fancy Ross County, because they have two major players with,
you taking that literally?
With excessive burns.
Ross County, they're all right, and they are where they are on the table, because that's, I mean, if we go back to our old friend XG, they are basically exactly where they should be. On a they're actually just slightly below like 0.7.
I do imagine XG as like JJ's best friend.
Mr. XG.
Actually, it's expected points I'm talking about. They're more or less where they should be. Hibs, I've not seen a huge improvement under Jack Ross, but I think that's just to do with the players. And I think the main problem they had was what Heckenbottom brought in, how it didn't really mould. And I think we'll see a better Hibs next season.
Well, Hibs play Kilmarnock on Saturday as well, so a battle of the top six is in full swing. What about Livingston versus St Mirren? After singing Livy's praises last week, they did go and lose two matches in a row, but their home form has been their saving grace this season. Do we expect them to get back to winning ways against a side that have now drawn four in a row in all competitions?
Yes, because they like the spaghetti had much more than the Highlands.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Livingston are very good. I really like Livingston. All their... I've been
so do Inverness.
So much stats bits this week looking at underlying stuff, and they are... they should be higher up than they actually are. Weirdly, St Mirren, right? So they're obviously sitting, what are they, the table just now? 10th,
third from bottom, I think.
10th, yeah. So they've got 22 points. They're expected points. So this is what the way they play, the teams they played, and the goals they've scored and let in, whatever. They should be on 33.9, so 34 points, we'll say, which would put them roughly equal Livingston. So they're kind of, actually, even though it looks like Livingston are a much better team and they're performing much better, and I think they've got better individual players as well. St Mirren, like, they've done really well this season, they just haven't got the results. Mm-hmm. It's just a weird sport where you can be the better team and still lose.
Well, yeah, I think St Mirren, with only one win away from home all season, it's going to be a tough old ask.
Especially in a different pitch, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Our final match of the Premiership midweek has third place Motherwell heading to eighth place St Johnstone. The home side look to have hit a bit of form of late, with Well not winning in three games. So where is this game going, guys?
According to my friend, XG, Motherwell are another one who are they're really overperforming. Underperforming, I should say. So they've got 41 points. They should have 33. Again, it's all Y-Scout numbers. So they will start to level out. And these are the sorts of games that they could end up losing, I think.
Motherwell have actually been on quite a poor run themselves. I think they've only scored one goal in the last four games. Brought in Tony Watt.
He's back.
I'm not entirely sure that's going to solve their goal scoring woes.
No, well, I was looking at Tony Watt and what he's done in Scottish football since he left Celtic.
What has he done?
Yeah, what has he done? Well, it's 9 goals, I think, in 49 games in Scotland. That's kind of including all competitions. And I would say that's not prolific enough, because this is a player who's, you know,
can
his potential was obvious.
Because he once scored against Barcelona. That's why we talk about him.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
We need to get out of it. That...
Yeah, we have to. You are right.
If Stevie May had scored against Real Madrid, we'd be on about him being amazing.
Oh, that would have been great.
I would have really liked that. I think he probably would have ended up somewhere abroad if he'd scored against Real Madrid. Yeah. Just because he looks like that.
That and the ponytail.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Got him a move.
The metalhead footballer.
Well, this is it. Tony Watt isn't the answer anyway. For Motherwell, who are probably pointing this where, you know, their points is correcting. So it could be the season that it levels out. It could be
the thing is, Stephen Robinson's done a lot for the players at Motherwell. He gets the best out of them. And you look at a player like Tony Watt, who kind of needs to reinvent himself as a player, because he's just not really been firing when he's been asked to. Do you know what I mean? He had failed. It was failed at St Johnstone. It wasn't so great at Hearts. And Stephen Robinson's given him another chance. It's whether or not he wants to actually be here.
I don't know if he'll actually play that much. He might just be on like a pay-as-you-play. He's just training with him. He didn't have a club, so that's the reason for it.
Well,
like
Motherwell, agent, yeah.
Yeah, Motherwell changed their style of play this season. We talked about this quite a lot. But as other teams have worked out how to shut that down, like, everyone would like to play nice football, ideally, but it often, in Scottish football especially, doesn't get you the result you need. Like, it just doesn't always guarantee it. So a lot of teams play kind of horrible football because that does work in Scotland, unfortunately, which is one of the reasons the national team is largely rubbish.
Yeah.
But I really think that's a problem, and it's just kind of, it comes right through from like junior Sunday league football, which is hoof football, like second ball, get stuck in, boys, and Motherwell playing nice football. They are doing very well this season, but it's not sustainable because underlying stats tell you that, like, and I'm not trying to like be a joy kill going with stats. Like, you watch the games and you see teams are doing well, but just because they are, just because they win doesn't mean they're a better team, and it does like level out over time.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah,
I totally agree.
Well, I'm glad.
Well,
that sounds like a stupid thing to say.
Well, that's all the midweeks wrapped up. Just before we actually wrap up, though, we should just end. We're sending our best wishes to Jackie McNamara, because news kind of came through while we were recording this that he's been rushed to hospital after collapsing outside his house on Saturday. So everyone here at the Totally Scottish Football Show sends our best wishes to him and his family. So that's it for another week of football or Fitbar. We'll have a double match week to look back on next Tuesday. So thank you to the Little Kicks. Thank you to you guys, JJ and Kieran. Thanks to Abby for all the wonderful producing stuff you do. And thank you to the listeners. We'll see you next Tuesday.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter. And make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Hello listeners, I'm Caroline Barker, host of the Totally Football League Show. I'm joined each week by Sam Parkin. Say hello, Sam.
Hi, Caroline.
By Adrian Clark. Say hello, Adrian.
Hello.
And the Bolton Wanderers fan too. Not Adrian, but Joe Cridley. Looking forward to League Two.
Yes.
Each week we go headfirst into the EFL to bring you the latest from the pitches to the next crisis to whatever Ian Holloway has said now. From Leeds to Luton, Sunderland to Plymouth, Swindon to Stevenage and everything in between. If it's the EFL you want, we've got you covered. Haven't we, Ollie?
Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
Your guess is as good as ours. That's the Totally Football League Show, out every Wednesday.
In the most delightful way. It's brilliant. I just love it.
Muddy Knees Media.